Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. Welcome to the program. Tonight, my very special guest is Julie Berlin. Her new book is titled Song for Ghosts. It's been described as being delightful, amusing, thought-provoking. Welcome, Julie.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. It's great to have. I've already got a smile on my face because I'm looking forward to hearing your work. Well, let's start this journey. Let's start this journey, okay? You ready?
Yes. Let's start it.
All right.
Let's do it.
Well, what is poetry? What is poetry to you?
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah. That's quite a loaded question to just get right out there with. For me, it's a way to express myself and to be creative. I mean, I was a very shy girl growing up, like the back of the class, like doesn't raise her hand kind of girl. So I was very much an observer, at a very young age. So for me, it's my way to like make a little mark on the world, because even quiet, shy people might have, stuff to say, even if it's simple stuff, but it's a way to connect to people.
I like that. It's so
other
nice.
Other humans, yeah.
Well, why do you think, in a general sense, that poetry is important?
Oh, well, if you don't think poetry is important, then maybe you don't think music is important. I mean, I think it kind of goes hand in hand, the same kind of deal there. It's important because it connects us and shows us we're human. It is a way to connect, to people. I just blanked out. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. No problem. No problem. We're together now. It's okay.
It's important, like music, and just it's an art form to be to appreciate and show that you're human. And then my personal goal with poetry is to like make it kind of fun and to connect to the every person, not just talk about things that nobody can relate to. I want to point out little things that we all can relate to, but in an interesting, different way.
All right. I like that. Please share a poem, my friend. Please share a poem.
Oh, okay. This is, I'm in California, but it's been very stormy and like dumb weather here when last week it was like 80 degrees and now we're like storming over here. So this is called Playing the Storm Out. The sky is dark and hovering low, and the cold steel wind makes the bare branches wave, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye. Everything's gone, nothing to face what's brewing, except me and the sleeping dog and this old beer snuck from the back of the fridge. My own blues, my own flat notes and rises, a song in the wind chimes. The sad and hopeful harmonica of my memory, never taken out and played, now dusted off as the clouds beat raindrops down. My lips humming in its teeth, singing, ain't nobody left me but myself. Ain't nobody left me but myself. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
The end.
Oh. Well, let me ask you. Let me ask you, what is the purpose of that poem?
What is the purpose? Well, literally, I was listening to Little Walter's Blues with a Feeling song. I was listening to that song, and then, I don't know, I just, like, it, literally the wind chimes were going, and I don't know. I just, the purpose is, maybe just looking back, you know, memories.
Looking back on life. Yeah.
Looking back at what? Gosh, you're just really going. No, looking at maybe like introspective.
Well, that's why they pay me the big bucks, Julie. What did you think you were coming to? We're a top-notch program. It's just me. I do everything. But we're a top-notch program over here. Okay, seriously.
Or like just looking inside, like me, maybe literally feeling blue, and that's why I love the blues. But I think the blues can also make me very happy too. But this is a little bit, feeling kind of alone, maybe. Yeah, I think it was,
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, as
yeah.
you think about who you are and your writing, and this is your second book, what are some of the predominant themes of your work?
My first book was right after I had my daughter, and that was, you know, before then. It was like a life of fun poetry readings and music and concerts and going out with friends and stuff, and then I had my daughter, and, you know, obviously that doesn't have to change, but it really was like a struggle of, like now I'm a mom, but can I be a mom and like this cool other person that used to do all these cool things? And so it was like a struggle, you know, that dichotomy or whatever. And so that was my first book. And this was, this book just was, I mean, I would say predominantly my themes are music is inspiration and just feeling like nostalgia, you know, after I'm getting older and, I'm literally middle-aged. I hate that. Like, I just said that out loud to, like, the radio universe.
I know the feeling.
Middle-aged.
We could spend a whole hour talking about being middle-aged and older. Ooh, can't we? Okay. Well, let's go back to the book.
Oh, yeah.
So music inspired the book?
A lot of songs, a lot of ways that I write poems come from, like, songs that I love. And so many, I would say possibly 75% of the poems in here come from, like, a song that I was listening to or inspired by a song. And,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, the cover of the book is quite striking. Tell me about the process for developing the cover.
Oh my gosh, what a great question. It's one of my favorite subjects. So I design, actually. I design books for, like, on the side or just, like, that's what I do. And so when my little manuscript landed on the desk of Lindsay Garcia, the most amazing young woman and like cheerleader for authors that come to Meadowlark Press. When it landed and she wanted to publish it, like from the get-go, she was like, you can have as little or as much hands in the publishing process as you want. And I knew that I would want at least, if I couldn't design the cover, which I couldn't see why not, but if I couldn't, you know, I wanted to completely be in charge of directing the cover. So She let me. She's like, you can do whatever you want. Just, you know, let's see what you come up with. And so I came up with a totally different cover, and it was all approved, and we were going to go to, like, order the proof. And then at the last minute, I was like, nope, there's something about it that isn't fully me or, like, really speaking to me, even though I just designed it. So I did a complete 180, and I came up with this concept, and it was like, yes, that was it, the go. And then Lindsay designed the interior, and I love how she did it because it's how I would have done it. So, yeah, it's really great.
Well, for those who have yet to see the book because it's newly off the presses, tell me about the concept. What is on the cover?
You know, one of my best friends in life, who's also a poet, who's also been on your show, Todd Cirillo, is lit.
My God.
He is like, oh my gosh, he's so amazing. Like, because he is just the most creative person to bounce. Like, we think alike, and we can bounce ideas off of each other. So he was, I don't know, saying something about, like, vintage, like something vintage on the cover, you know, maybe an old vintage album cover or something. And then I was like, vintage. I thought of the vintage stripes that I love. Like, you just look at those colors and you see vintage. And then I thought of the sound waves, and melding the two together.
So, all right. Very
and
nice.
I think a black cover is pretty striking always, I think.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. Yeah. Well, let me ask you, if you had to, and I'm going to use the word convince, a friend or colleague to purchase a copy of your book, what would you share with them?
Well, I work at my library here, and, you know, a lot of my coworkers are, you know, obviously into books and stuff, but they might not really be into poetry per se at all, or like know much about it. But so one of my coworkers, she said, I want to come to your book launch, but you know, I don't really, you know, I don't necessarily like poetry or know a lot about poetry. And I said, that's exactly why. I said, you are like my goal in life. It's people like you that I want to come to my reading and read my work, because I want you to walk away going, okay, that was actually really cool and really fun. And I totally had a different experience with it and connected to it in ways I didn't think I wasn't expecting. Cause yeah,
right.
I try to make, well, yeah.
Well, please share a poem. Please share another poem.
Okay. This is Armstrong Park with Collie for my buddy Todd Cirillo. It was the beginning of a Friday night and the end of a work week from hell. He headed toward the music, where it's free and open, as it always is in New Orleans. He stopped under the towering statue of Louis with brass trumpet in hand, the sun setting behind him in streaked oil paint colors across the southern sky. And all he wanted to do was sit there, he texted me, in the park with a collie. Everything about this statement made sense, held true, except the collie part. He hates dogs, thinks they are man's failed attempt at being human. I thought maybe he turned a corner, saw the greatness that emanates from such benevolent and all-knowing companions, thought his heart opened a little more to this great world. A collie, I texted back. Coldie, I meant a coldie. And I couldn't. I could practically hear the cat and him laughing out loud, cursing autocorrect as the sun set and the jazz played on. Thank you.
That's for you, Todd. I like that. Let's go back in time. Let's go back in time. All right?
Yeah.
Going back in time.
Okay. Okay.
What was an early experience where you learned that poetry had power?
Oh, boy. Well, let's see. It definitely, I wrote poetry like in high and high school, but it wasn't because I was inspired by what they were teaching me. You know, I found all that stuff, you know, boring crap. But but I was a person who was very passionate, and I, you know, fell in love every other day with a different person. So I loved writing, loved poetry. So I just did that for fun. And sometimes I would give my boyfriends like the poems, but they were like, "What's this crap?" But I think when it really hit was when I was in college, the early years of college, and learning about PTU in high school. And then, you know, people completely different from me, but like still completely connecting and thinking it's, you know, connecting with their work. And Bukowski was one of those. Charles Bukowski, as a young girl, an older man, I was like a teenager, like an older, like I was like 18, and he was like a friend of a friend. And I remember one time he worked at a restaurant with my friend, and we were sitting at a table, and he's like, "So you should know Bukowski, and here's like a poem," because he knew I liked like Hemingway and like really simple, you know, sentence structure and all that. So he showed me Bukowski, and I just fell in love. I was like, whoa, like poetry can be simple and not, you know, this lofty thing, and you know, still make a humongous punch, you know. So fell in love at that point. Yeah.
Well, again, when you think about your work, how does a poem begin for you? With an idea, an image, or a form?
Definitely not a form. A form. What's
okay.
A form? No, I'm just kidding. probably like a line will come to me, and it will have to be or something I hear or something I experience that just hits me, and then I come up with a line, and then I build it around that line. That's usually how it works to me.
Okay. Share another poem. Share another poem.
Okay. Okay, great. This is Stranded. After a tough day of being a mom with no other aspects of me showing, I am huddled against the kitchen sink, water running to drown out the sound of my daughter crying for something when all she ever gets is my undivided love. I pretend to wash sippy cups or the vegetables I should be cooking for dinner, but instead I reach in the freezer behind the Eggo waffles, tucked in there neatly, slide out my bottle of gin, sip right from the lip. On the other side of town, friends gather and drink cheap beer pitchers, laugh and tell stories of their days at the river or their musical nights with new and exciting strangers, wonder where I am for a brief moment. Hopeless, I retreat to the living room where my daughter is now coloring in quiet, learning her letters. I look down, and there under her pink sea and purple seahorses, among the scribbles and squiggles, the message is clear. S-O-S. Thank you.
Wow. You know, the line that stood out to me was no other aspects of me showing. No other aspects of me showing. Tell me about that line. That is extremely striking.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. Like, because I was literally in momhood at that at that in that moment, just completely just a mom, no other aspects, no other, not the the friends gathering and drinking cheap beer pitchers or any of that. I was just the mom listening to her child cry in the other room.
Well, that packs a punch. Truly it does.
Oh, let's take a brief break. Thank you.
We'll take a brief break and we'll be right back. We are back. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Julie Valen. Talented Julie Valen.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it right.
You got
your work.
You got it.
Thank you so much. Your work to me is about emotion. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Or,
do you think there's
emotion? Go ahead.
Emotion? Okay. Do you think that someone can be called a poet if they don't feel strong emotions in their work? If you don't see strong emotions in their work?
Well, we see it every darn day where they're not necessarily showing their emotions at all. But I guess you can still be. You could still be a poet and not, like, reveal your emotions clearly in your poems. But I think because I write in the narrative style, it's, like, kind of the after-hours style, which is, you know, kind of confessional and, you know, about everyday moments and stuff. I guess I, you know, I can reveal clearly my emotions. And it actually surprised me because people keep saying, you know, people that maybe don't read a lot of poetry, like friends that have my book, they're telling me, you know, it's so personal. And I'm like, oh, oh, shoot. Like, what did I just reveal without, like, really knowing that I'm revealing that? But, I mean, I guess I kind of knew I was revealing it. I don't know if you know.
Right.
What I mean, but,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think mine is like more like more revealing and outwardly you know, saying what I'm really feeling or going through.
All right. I understand that. You know, I did not ask you if you come from a literary background.
Oh. No, not at all. I mean, I just grew up, my mom would always be reading a book, like every day she was reading. So it made me, like, love reading books at an early age. And then I think, you know, as I said, being, like, a quiet, you know, girl and stuff, like, I could get lost in books. And so in that way, like, I became kind of, like, really interested in literary, all things literary, but yeah, not really influenced by anybody in my family. but very supported, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Please share another poem. Please share another poem. I want to hear your work.
Okay. This is When Ghosts Appear for Carrie Floyd. Claimed he saw Bukowski, the now long dead poet, who just appeared before him, smiling big, standing over a bird. A blue bird? I asked cleverly, referencing his most famous poem. No, just a regular bird, he replied, matter-of-factly. I was curious. I wonder why he was smiling. I think he was just trying to tell me that things were going to be really good for me from now on. I wanted to press him. Why the bird? Because the bird represents me, how I travel from port to port with not a thing to my name and never a need to unpack, just exploring any place I want, away from the people. That's cool, was all I could say. That's just my interpretation, he continued. When ghosts appear, you can't ask them why they're there. You can only guess. You can be right or you can be wrong. You'll never know for sure. That's the thing about ghosts. We were quiet for the rest of the car ride home. He was looking out the window at the swamp, at the yucca trees, at the crumbling stones of the ancient Fort St. John. He pointed out a lone bird in the middle of the field, standing by an unmarked grave, foraging for worms as the green grass waved. Thank you.
Wow. I'm glad that you shared that particular poem because you used the word ghost, and I had planned to ask you to tell me about the title of your book, Song of Ghosts.
Yeah, so Songs for Ghosts. Well, I looking through it, my manuscript when I was looking at, there were literal, like, had references to phantoms or ghosts, but I think generally, like overall, ghosts can be just people that are like your past in your past that are no longer in your life or, that made an impression on you or whatever. So it's full of ghosts.
Do you spend a lot of time at poetry readings, or maybe prior to the pandemic, were you a regular person reciting your work on the mic, that type of thing?
No, I haven't been in the last like probably 6 years or so. But that's where I met Cirillo and people like Bill Gaynor. I became a part of the Nevada County Poetry Series in like 2001 or two. And it was a monthly series and I was on the board with I don't know how many of us were 6 or something. And we would have two featured readers and then an open mic every month. And so I was a part of that, that's where I met Todd Cirillo, and he kind of taught me or demonstrated to me like how to actually like get up and perform your poems or just like he's a really he's an amazing performer. He's very like active on the stage and very engaging and like kind of engages with the audience, sometimes even talks to the audience and people talk to him and stuff, and I had never seen a poetry done that way. So not that I'm that like outgoing or whatever on the stage, it's taken me a very long time to learn how to like not even be nervous or anything, but to just be strong in my presentation of my poems.
Well, that was going to be my question. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice, if there's a relationship at all.
Well, that is. I don't know if you mean like philosophically or like literally, but
either one, either one, my friend.
I have a T-shirt that says I write better than I talk, and that is for damn sure. I'm not a very articulate person sometimes, and I have a lot of ums and all that. But but when I'm writing, you know, it's a whole different thing. And my mom told me, like, I kind of don't remember doing this, but as a teenager, when I got really, really mad at her, I would write her, like, letters instead of just yelling at her. So I'm really much more brave. I'm much more brave in my writing voice than my speaking voice.
Which brings up the question, has a poem ever humbled or frightened you, one that you've written?
Wow, that is such a good question. There is, there's one poem from each of my books that, like, I read. I'll use my first book. When I read that poem in public, like at a reading, and my husband was sitting in the audience, he said later, he's like, he is the most supportive person. I just want to say that. But he goes, that was a little hard to sit through, he says. It really was, I guess, personal. See, that's what's, like, bizarre. Like, I think I'm just writing poems. I didn't really realize I am, I guess, revealing some things, but especially if the person knows what I'm talking about or whatever. So that poem, I don't really perform, you know, out loud at all. And then there's one in my new book that just makes me kind of sad, so I don't perform it. Usually, I only did it one time, and it was hard.
Wow, very nice. I guess I can't say very nice, but I understand. I understand. Very nice didn't fit right there. I understand. Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. As you think about your writing, in terms of accessibility, should one have to work to solve a poem?
That is completely a big fat no. They should not have to work to solve a poem. I mean, that's kind of
Tell me more.
I mean, you want to connect, right? When you're listening to poetry, you want to connect. You want to be able to visualize, you know, at least, at the very least, visualize what they're talking about. And you want to understand it. That's the misconception about poetry, or people that don't commonly go to poetry readings or read poetry, is they think it is something you have to kind of figure out, and that scares them. They don't know that's not all poetry is like that, and my goal is to make it completely not like that. And I really love, I can't help it, I mean, I know he's a household name in poetry, but I love Billy Collins, and his work is very accessible and funny, but also like, whoa, like it can pack a punch and make you feel stuff. And he said, the word accessible to me, when people call my poems accessible, it's like hearing, you know, nails scratching on a chalkboard. He goes, I don't really like it, because what they mean is that, what that implies is that it takes no craft to make a poem accessible. And that is completely not the case. He's still a very huge genius in crafting the poem, even though he talks about things we all can relate to. So that, to me, makes a big impact.
Well, I want to make an observation. Accessibility must be very important to you, because your voice took on a different onus. It was very powerful when you talked about it. It was very not so, I won't say in your face, but there's a richness to it that it was different. I don't know. It's just something about that just seemed to strike you differently. I don't know. I'm just saying what I'm what I'm hearing.
I like that. That's cool. I must be very passionate about that.
Very passionate. That's the word. That's the word, passionate. You know, let me ask you a question. I know you're tired of my question. But what I want to know is, what surprises you about being a poet?
Surprises me. Well, gosh, what surprises me?
Or maybe I'll ask, what have you learned about yourself being a poet? Either one of those you can answer.
Well, just that, I mean, I have learned that, I think right in the beginning, that, you know, I could be kind of, you know, I'm not, I don't love, like, being in the spotlight and completely talking about myself, said no poet ever, except for me, because I really don't love it a lot. But,
right.
So, but that doesn't mean that I don't have things, like, cool things to say and make you think about in my poetry. And again, that connects me, because I'm not going to be out there going, hey, look at me, you know, I can still kind of connect, plug into the world through my work. And that makes me happy. I like that.
Very nice. Because just based on what I've heard tonight, you do have things to share with the world. And I think it's beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much, Michael.
Yes, yes.
That's great.
Another poem. Another poem, please.
Okay. Okay. This is called Chopsticks. Me, how to eat sushi with chopsticks. Thank you. Because of you, I was able to eat an entire spicy tuna roll today while driving. I pulled it off expertly using only chopsticks, box in my lap, knees on the wheel, and then a Cat Power song came on with the sound of thunder in the background to add to the significance. She was singing, I will love this love forever, a notion we never allowed to spill between us on that gray day in my living room, the rain shouting against the sliding glass door, and both of us quiet with knowing. We were too mixed up with everything, the rain, the Cat Power album, the impossible distance. But I look back and love how your hands, like a surgeon's, clasped the two sticks deftly as you gently squeezed the small, delicate heart on your plate before you consumed it. Thank you.
You know, as I was reviewing the titles of your poems, they're intricate, they're very detailed. What role should a title play for a poem?
Oh, my gosh. Titles are really important, but I will admit I kind of suck at them. And whereas Todd's a
I wouldn't have been able to tell, like, so go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, Todd Cirillo is a master at titles. Sometimes he'll help me, like, think about me. Yeah, it's that's a tough one. I think, I mean, maybe after all, they don't make a humongous difference, but, you know, they kind of do, actually.
All right. Yeah. So when you say they kind of do, what for you, what goes into the title? Is it the emotional piece? Is it something else? What? Process it for me. Talk to me.
Well, sometimes it's like pulling like a line or something from, you know, from like a clever line or something, or part of a line, or just like, yeah, just the summary.
Okay.
Yeah. or a repetition of a line. I don't know.
That's
good.
All right.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, one more question before I'd like you to share another poem. Now, I want you to go back in time, all right? If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
It would be to just, maybe something for, always writing and not really caring what other people think until the day she shared her poems in public and she got a great response. I mean, that showed her. Anyways, that's took a lot of bravery. So I would probably commend her for making that leap, because you can't really be a poet and just write poems in your room or whatever behind a closed door. You really have to share them. That's what makes you a poet, in my opinion.
Now, well, do you think you were meant to be a poet?
Yes, for sure.
Mm. Tell me more. Why? Why?
I always, you said it, I've always been an emotional, person. Mm-hmm. And introspective, and very introspective. So that just leads right into writing poetry.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Share another piece. It's fulfilling. Okay.
Well, make it fulfilling for me right now. Recite another piece.
Okay.
I'm enjoying you so much, so I'm so glad you're with me tonight.
Thank you so much, Michael. I'm enjoying myself too. You make it very easy and fun, and I love that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that.
This is called Another Poem Lives. He picked me up at the Louis Armstrong Airport, followed by a failed attempt at the drive-through daiquiri shop, with the joint surrounded by 6 cop cars and the worker being walked out in handcuffs. Sam's daiquiris, he drove me around the Lower Garden District, pointing out shotgun houses and antebellum witches' mansions, the colors and shapes, a gallery of streets, and then an evening walk down Magazine to the neighborhood Vietnamese place under a vampire sky. Now, here we are in his New Orleans living room, drinking vodka and sodas out of famous glasses etched in the city's architecture. 3 years gone, and little Walter playing against the rock and roll hum of the window cooler and overhead fan. He tells me stories of his after-hours adventures in his new adapted dialect, with all traces of California gone. He remains a poem wrapped up in life, even his street is named after the Greek muse of lyrical poetry, for God's sake. He refills our drinks, and somehow she comes up. He loved her, he admits. He still loves her. At least you got some damn good material, I offer. Yeah, he exhales in sort of a laugh. Material can sure keep me warm in the middle of the night, if I set it on fire. The famous glass he's holding sweats like tears running down on what will now become this famous August night, the humid air choking and glistening with truth as the blues ring out and another poem lives and breathes. Thank you.
Wow. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
right, we are back. Julie, my friend Julie. Not only are we, a radio program, a blog talk show that talks about different things, we're also a call-in show, and you have a caller.
No way.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. And this person wants to ask you a question. Are you ready?
Okay. I am so ready.
All right. All right. Area code 504. The first three numbers are 228. You're on the air with Julie.
Well, you could have added the rest of the numbers in case there's any single women out there who might want the rest of it. So quickly, I do have a question for Julie. Quick comment right before. What I really love, what Julie said early in the program, when you asked her about the poems, what was the meaning or something, and there really wasn't one, and she admitted that. Because most poets will try to, it seems like they want to create a whole, you know, almost like a university lecture about the depth and meaning. And sometimes I like how honest she was and how simple. Sometimes it just, you know, don't know what it's about, or it's just words written down. My question is, how do you know when it's time to get the work done? When it's really time to write,
question.
What gets you to write, and how do you know it?
When it's just time to write?
Yeah, what does it take to get you to write and produce poems? Do you know it ahead of time, like when it's coming?
Oh, I never really know when it's coming, but it's usually inspired by, like, an experience, an experience being out in the world and seeing something or noticing something or hearing something. And then if it, like, inspires me or something, then I want to, work with it and kind of, make it a thing that somebody goes, oh, wow, you know, or just, yeah. But, you know, with the stupid pandemic and everything, we weren't really going out a lot. We weren't out in the world. Like, you have to be kind of out in the world like you are, Mr. Cirillo. You're out in the world all the time. With the pandemic, like, there were some people that were like, oh, I just, like, wrote every day. Not me. No fucking way. I had absolutely no inspiration to do it for a long time, but
how
yeah.
do you know when it's time
but
to
I
write
did...
a line down?
When I see something or when it, like, right there in the moment, like, sometimes it's in my car or something, you know, I'm driving in my car and, like, something will come to me or a line, something, a song comes on or something, and I'll literally pull over and write it down, you know, in the car or, out at the grocery store or whatever. I'll go back and write it down if something strikes me.
I'd like to piggyback on those questions.
And Michael,
let me piggyback before
questions.
You go. Before you go, Mr. Cirillo, you know you're my man. Here we go, Julie.
Right back at you.
Some poets claim, listen, some poets claim that a poem is like a living creature. Once it's out there, there's not much you can do to correct or improve it, while others edit meticulously, not leaving much from the original draft form. What is your take on it in terms of editing? Maybe you've already answered this. I just want to know again.
No, I mean, sometimes I can get, it'll be brilliant. I'll get the whole thing down and it's, you know, pretty good, but, or whatever, or I'll think it is, but it definitely will always need some kind of revision. I mean, sometimes I don't say exactly what I want to say and I go around, I don't go around the wall that I have set up there for myself. So it actually takes somebody like Todd. He's literally the only human on the planet right now that can look at my poems and go, no, you, that's not quite. Like, you kind of, you're kind of saying this. And it always surprises me because, like, yeah, because maybe it's not obvious when I write it down. So so revision is very important, but yeah, rarely does it just all come out and it's like brilliant. But.
All right. Well, Mr. Cirillo, Todd Cirillo, you need to come back on the program, my friend. It's been too long.
Would love to. Let me write a few more things because I'm sure Julie can agree with me on this. Never trust a poet who gets up and says, I just wrote this.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
You're my buddy.
Just absolutely wonderful. Just absolutely wonderful. Julie, love you. Mean it.
All right. It's nice.
Yeah, darling.
Very nice. Very, very nice. The only way we can follow that up is with you sharing another poem.
Oh, okay. I'm going to leave this playful poem with this playful, not leave. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. Drunk satisfaction. Two white Russians made with your grandmother's jackass jigger glass overtake your keto withered body on a Wednesday night, slightly after dinner time, and the only person around to see it is your best friend halfway across the country on a screen. Are you still drunk? We were right in the middle of a meaningful discussion about what poetry can and can't do for the people when my phone goes dead. With that apt metaphor, I bump around in the kitchen with my curious dog staring at the floor by my feet, and I'm doing this and I'm slicing that, and the Stones come on the radio, and I'm trying to make some toast, but I can't get no avocado. The knife slips, flies, and skids across the floor and lands right under my dog's nose, but somehow I don't miss a beat and continue chopping things. I make something edible having to do with mayo and mustard and cheese on a low-carb tortilla with a side pile of Doritos because I'm a rebel like that. I make another white Russian with my grandmother's glass, do a silent air cheers to all the jackasses, and think more about poetry and what the people want when it comes to it. I have no answers, except that this sandwich thing is rewarding and those Doritos really clench the deal, which is all the satisfaction I'm going to get on a Wednesday. Thank you.
All right. Do you know, and hopefully you'll indulge me, the poem that I want to hear is one where you mention Nina Simone. And the title of it is Empty Room Radio. I've got to hear that. I've got to hear it out loud.
I actually, it's one of my favorite poems, so thank you for requesting it. I would love to read it. Empty Room Radio. You are my favorite song that hasn't come on in years, the one I dance in the car to or play while chopping onions with a steady beat and a wild trumpet solo. I am Nina Simone beckoning. Do I move you? Are you willing? Do I groove you? Is it thrilling? I am BB's Lucille, my soul strummed and bent, ringing out, filling every corner of the space you stand in long after I've walked away. I am 3 a.m. blues, Coco Taylor's voodoo woman. I can look through water and spy dry land. I'm looking through water now and can still make out your face. I swear you're smiling. I am the radio left on in an empty room, my hopeful notes plucking the curtains with the kiss of a harmonica, a chorus of please.
Oh, wow. I like that.
That's it.
I like
well,
that.
Well, if you like that, you should, Thank you so much, Michael. And so the cool thing that I did, because sometimes I do cool things, but I made a soundtrack, and it's in the back of the book. You can actually scan the Spotify code and go right to it, but it has Nina Simone, Coco Taylor, Little Walter, you know, like a wide range of my influences there. Yeah.
Wow. You know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you the following questions, one that I've asked over 200 guests now. What do you view as being the role of a poet in modern-day society?
What role of a modern-day poet?
Yes, what is the role of a poet, yes, in modern-day society? Yes. What do you think?
Oh, the role of a poet, I think, is to kind of, like, turn a mirror onto all of humanity and just maybe it's also at the same time marking our time in history, and that's always a cool thing, a cool way to leave your mark on the world is to go back. That's what I think. And then, you know, I keep saying it, it's a way to connect and just plug into the world and share and share yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And you've talked about connection a lot tonight, Dan, the importance of it. And I agree.
Yeah.
We're almost at the end of our journey, my friend. Is there one more poem you'd like to share with us? Just one more?
I have a little short poem that's from my my first book, The Between, and it's like just so simple, but it's like one of my favorite poems.
All right.
And it's called Scars. Scars. You promised you would kiss every one of them if you could find them. I would scar them into me all over again if I believed you. That's it.
Oh, wow.
That's not all she wrote, though. That's it, Michael.
All right. I was settling in, ready for some more. Wow. I had barely settled in, and she was over. Okay.
Pulled a fast one on you.
Where can listeners find your work? Where can they find Songs for Ghosts?
Oh, okay. So it actually is on Amazon, but you also should be able to order it at any of your local bookstores, but also through Meadowlark Press directly, and their website. Oh, my God, I had it right here. But I think it's meadowlarkbookstore.com will take you right to the book, or you could go to I made a book page for it, and because it was a MailChimp thing, it was like a long address, so I used tiny URL, which is tinyurl.com/mcsongsforghosts. And
all right.
Mary. Yeah.
Well, it's also on the information page. If you go back to read more about Julie, it's on the information page on Blog Talk Radio. That's another place you can find the information about where you can find the book. All right. How
Thank
can listeners
so
stay in touch with you, Julie? How can they stay in touch?
Look me up on Facebook or Instagram. I'm there. I'm right there. And I that's the best place. Just Julie Berlin, on Facebook.
Final question. What is in the works for you next? What's next?
Oh, wait, is there another thing, or can I just, like, no. just sitting back. No, I'm just kidding. Sitting back, I got that done with. I'm just, like, no, I'm still writing. I'm writing a few poems here and there, and, you know, we're always going to be doing that. So who knows, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Who knows what
will
come, but it'll take me a few years probably to gather another book.
Well, I want to thank you. It was a long journey for us to get here. And we
yes,
got here.
It was.
So much has happened. So much has happened.
So much.
Since we first emailed each other. But I'm glad you're here. You made my evening. I love your work. Songs for Ghosts.
So much.
Great, great book, poetry book. You're talented. You've got a bright future. And I wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much, Michael. You're awesome, and I'm a big fan. Just a big fan
Aww.
Of you.
Thank you. We're both smiling now.
All right.
Well,
know, for real.
All right. Everybody out there in the listening land, I want to thank you for joining us tonight, for being here every week. And as I share with you my famous statement, let poetry ring somewhere. All right, goodbye. Take care and good night.
Aww. Bye-bye.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at qlpor.com.